We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 19th chapter, verses 27 to 43. Verse 27. Tasma trini padanyeva vineta vadadarshada ita vatayivisitta ham vitam yavat payochanam. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased, for the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. Mukham karati vachanam pangalam khayate tibhinya ipandamaham vande shikaram tinacharanam Om jnana kumaranasya jnananjaya shalataya So what do you remember from chapters 16 and 17? Yes.
The case is that Varuna came to Valivumiraj.
Oh, that's way after, but that's okay. That's after 16, 17. Yes, he came.
16, 17. Oh, now we're in 19.
Now we're in 19. Yes, that's the chapter 19. He came. That's the chapter we are on now. 16, 17 was a long time ago. Payovrat, yes? Yeah, that was chapter 15. He conquered all the 3 worlds. Right. Yes, Aditi, under advice of her husband, she performed Payovrat because when the children are in trouble, the mother suffers the most. And so in this case, the mother saved the children. Living on milk. Okay? So. Yes, and therefore, because of her great austerity and devotion, and the Lord agreed to become her son. So Lord Vamanadeva appeared in chapter 18. And what happened in chapter 18 when after Lord Vamana appeared? Yes? Yes, so he said, well, actually, I can't satisfy you your request in the way you want. You asked that I vanquish the demons. But it's not possible because Shukracharya has brought them to power. The power of and Krishna always supports the Brahmins. He doesn't go against the Brahmins. So therefore, I cannot defeat them.
But because my devotees never goes in vain, I will come and help you.
Yes, I will come and help you anyway, because my darshan does not go in vain. Okay, chapter 18. Chapter 19. Now we're in this chapter. Yes, Malvendra? Uncontrolled senses are the source of discontentment. And we should be satisfied with whatever comes according to our destiny. Yes, and if we are satisfied, then you'll be happy. It's the only way to be happy in this world, is to be satisfied with what you have. Okay, anything else? Jaini Tagore?
Bali Maharaj.
You speak very learned words, Bali Maharaj said to Vamana.
But you're just a child.
Yeah, you're just a child. Your intelligence is insufficient. You don't understand what is for your own self-interest. Yes, I can give you a whole island in this universe. Why are you only asking for 3 steps of land? If I got on one island, then I'll want 2. I'll want more. I won't be satisfied. Yes. Okay. Anything else, Adi Purush? You have anything from... Did you bring me any commentaries? No, no commentaries. Okay. What to do? So, now we are in verse 27, and again, Vamanadeva is reiterating his words that he only wants 3 steps of Lent. 3 steps is enough, but actually, there's a lot behind those 3 steps. It's not just three steps, because he's the Supreme Personality of God. He looks very small, but actually, there's immense power behind that very small form. And this is something we have to learn to prepare us for hearing the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, hearing about Krishna. Even though he's a small baby, there is immense power in that. And in Vamanadev, to show his immense power, he's going to expand to the size of the universe. But Lord Krishna, even as a small baby, he doesn't need to expand to show his power. He just shows his power. Even as an infant, he can defeat great demons. He can lift Govardhan Hill at the age of 7. And so this is preparing us for the form of Krishna. When we hear about Krishna in the 10th canto, we have to remember all these things about these different incarnations and what we learn from the different incarnations. So from Vamanadeva we can learn this, that whatever form the Lord takes has immense power. It may be deceiving, looks are deceiving. So verse 28, Shukadeva Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, Bali smiled and told him, all right, take whatever you like. To confirm his promise to give Vamanadeva the desired land, he then took up his water pot. Understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose, Shukacharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadeva. Shukacharya said, O son of Hirochan, this brahmachari in the form of a dwarf is directly the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Accepting Kashyap Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interests of the demigods. You do not know what a dangerous position you have accepted by promising to give him land. I do not think this promise is good for you. It will bring great harm to the demons. This person, falsely appearing as a brahmachari, is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. After taking everything from you, he will deliver it to Indra, your enemy. So, his guru is explaining. The guru, the brahmanas, they can see past, present, future. And he understands what's actually happening. And he's saying, this is Vishnu. He's come to cheat you out of your land. And he's going to give it to your enemies. After so much hard work, we got the heavenly planets. And now you're going to give it away like that? So, purport. So what is this? What is the meaning of the word Hari? Takes away everything. He cuts the attachments. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains in this regard, the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes away all his miseries. Isn't that nice? So we're afraid he's going to take away something else besides our miseries. And in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education, and beauty. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugrihanami harishita chanam shanai. So this verse is going to be the theme song of these chapters of Bali Maharaj. And it means, the Lord said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the first installment of my mercy toward a devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is the special favor of the Lord toward a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness, by tactics the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here, Shukacharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus, he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one delivers his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindaya, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, He was attached to material possessions, and therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Lord Vamana to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. So do we know anyone who is a devotee and who's attached to material possessions at the same time? Me. Yes? Indra. Okay, Indra's a devotee and he's attached. Who else? We heard of before somebody. Yes. Daksha. And somebody else was attached. Yes. Jitaketu, Dhruva Maharaj, he was attached. But then, of course, he didn't take everything away from Dhruva. He gave everything to Dhruva. But Daksha lost everything. Daksha lost. Indra loses. He always loses, and then he gets it back. So here is another example of Indra losing everything, but he's going to get it back again. So any experience where we got the first installment of Krishna's mercy, you can raise your hand if anybody got that installment sometime. Yes, one, two. You got the installment where Krishna took away everything, and then you got Krishna consciousness in exchange. So I have one thing here from memories. This is from Atma Tattva Prabhu about Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada was, in this case, in the position of Vamanadev. He was wanted to take everything from this businessman, rich businessman. One big businessman said, "Swamiji, I have a factory here in Delhi, I have a factory in Jayapur," and he went on and on, and a factory here and a factory there. He listed everything. He said, "I have all this, but I can't sleep." Prabhupada said, "You can't sleep because you have so many things. Give them to me and then you can sleep peacefully." That's Prabhupada. Then he turned to somebody and said, "Take his address." The man said, "No, Swamiji, I can come anytime." Prabhupada said, "You can come anytime, but we should also be able to go to you anytime. Take his address." "No, no, Swamiji." Here's Vamanadev coming to take away everything. That's Prabhupada with this big businessman. Prabhupada said, "If you give some of your things to Krishna, you'll be peaceful. We will relieve you of your problem." He said, "Can't sleep at night." The man was smashed right there and he gave his address. He had to. Well, that was Srila Prabhupada in the mood of Vamanadev. There's another example of the mother of Brahmananda and Gargamuni. Brahmananda says, "My mother went to visit Srila Prabhupada and she sat on a folding metal chair meant for VIPs. Mother said to Prabhupada, 'What are you doing with my boys?' Prabhupada said, 'I'm taking care of your sons. I'm feeding them, looking after them, providing. Actually, we have no income here. Maybe you would like to give some donation?'" The mother looked at the boys, looked at Prabhupada and said, "Donation? I've already given a donation. I've donated my sons." Prabhupada said, "Oh yes, very good." That time he let her off. He said, "Okay, sons, that is good. Good enough." So this is Krishna consciousness. Somebody cannot sleep at night because they have all this wealth and these problems with wealth. And Prabhupada said, "Okay, we'll solve your problem for you. We'll take away your wealth." So now again, Vamanadeva is going to solve Bali Maharaj's problem. But Shukracharya, his guru, doesn't want this to happen. He's telling Balaraj, "No, no, tell him no." Because he did all this sacrifices, he brought Bali Maharaj to power, and if Bali loses his power, then Shukracharya will also lose his position. He'll lose his maintenance. So therefore, there is something behind this instruction of the guru here. The instruction of the guru: don't worship Vishnu. Say no. Don't give to Vishnu. So what is fortunate from the material perspective is very different from what is fortunate from the spiritual perspective. If somebody loses everything in this world, people will think, "Oh, he's so unfortunate. He has lost his money, he has lost his computer, he has lost his cell phone. How will he live without these things?" So that is the way of material vision. But spiritual vision is, wow, He's lost these burdens. These are all like, we're in the ocean of nescience. And we're trying to swim in the middle of the ocean. And while we're trying to swim in the middle of the ocean, we're carrying so many things while we're trying to swim. And when we try to swim and carry all these things, and what will happen? We'll sink to the bottom. And that is the mode of ignorance. Mode of ignorance, mode of passion. Can't stay in the mode of goodness. So the more we lose these things, if we're not using them in Krishna's service, then they're a burden. If we can use everything in Krishna's service, that's okay. But here, Bali Maharaj, he is not actually the one who is supposed to be the king of heaven. He's supposed to be the king of the demons in the lower planets. He's not supposed to be there. So he's actually overthrowing the management of the universe. So therefore, he's causing a disturbance. And this is not pleasing to Krishna. But actually, in this material world, we have to find out what is pleasing to Krishna. And so it's not, we have our renunciation, we can say in two words. What are those two words? Our Krishna conscious renunciation. Yes? Yukta Vairagya. So we have things, we can use them in Krishna's service, and then it's okay. So, Burijan makes a comment that we must gradually move towards Krishna. We can't surrender too quickly. What happens if you surrender all at once? Just give up everything if you're not ready. If you're ready, it's okay. Adi Purush? It bounces back on you, yes. Yeah, if you give up everything immediately and you're not on that level, then you're going to go back to that level eventually. So Virgin says, we'll become frantic if you try to give it up immediately and you'll try to hold on to the material side. So he gives advice that we should give up the shackles of matter slowly. But Bali Maharaj is taking the direct, quick path, and that's Atma Nivedanam, very fast. There's a gradual, step-by-step path, and then there's also the direct path. And in this age of Kali, we don't have time to take the step-by-step path. That's how it was when Srila Prabhupada was here. The preaching was, if you don't live in the temple, you're in Maya. You have to give up everything, and that means all your money you give to the temple, all your possessions. That was the preaching in the 70s. And if you don't do that, you can't be a devotee. Now, of course, it's much more, there's congregational preaching, there's so many people living outside the temple, and they're also devotees. I was just reading a magazine before I came here, Congregational Development, Congregational Journal. And they had a comic of some GBC members, and they were looking at a big target of trying to double everything. And they had these little teeny arrows, and they were shooting it one by one to the target. And then all of a sudden, this huge missile comes and blows the target away, and it's congregational preaching. How to increase the book distribution, how to increase the preaching, is the congregation. So it's taken a while for ISKCON to come to that point. But when we became devotees, it was Atma Nivedanam all the way. And if grihastas, brahmachari didn't matter. You all have to follow the same rules. You know, live in the temple, husband and wife separately, and everyone's renounced. So the path of surrender, it's not gradual. Burijan says that Krishna will hear the prayers of the Sharanagata devotees attentively, those who are completely surrendered, but other prayers not so attentively. And sometimes Krishna forces the issue. He takes everything away and the devotee has nowhere to turn but Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said that happened in his life, that he was attached to, he thought he'll make a lot of money, as Prabhupada said, and then he will use that money for preaching. But Krishna took his whole business away from him, and he was forced to turn to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that. So don't be surprised if that may happen sometimes in your life. But it's the best thing if this happens to you. Because after that, then you get the wonderful feeling of depending on Krishna. Before you depend, you have something. You can depend on these things, this money, this, that, these friends. If Krishna takes it all away, then you have nobody but Krishna to depend on. So it's a very nice feeling. So Bali Maharaj We will see his determination to give everything to Krishna despite his guru's advice. And now Shukracharya is speaking. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity, but when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. You are a rascal. You don't know what a great mistake you have made. After giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you will have no means of livelihood. How then shall you live? And how will I live? He's thinking also. The Śrīla Prabhupāda says in the purport, Bali Maharaj might argue that he had promised only 3 steps of land. So this may, well, he said, it's only 3 steps, it's nothing. But Shukracharya, being a very learned Brahmin, immediately understood this was a plan of Hari, who had falsely appeared there as a brahmachari. The words Mudha Ratish Yase Katam reveal that Shukracharya was a brahmana of the priestly class. Such priestly Brahmins are mostly interested in receiving remuneration from their disciples. Therefore, when Shukracharya saw that Bali Maharaj had risked all of his possessions, he understood that this would cause havoc not only to the king, but also to the family of Shukracharya, who is dependent on Maharaj Bali's mercy. This is the difference between a Vaishnava and a Smarta Brahmin. A Smarta Brahmin is always interested in material profit, whereas a Vaishnava is interested only in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the statement of Shukracharya, it appears that he was in all respects a Smarta Brahmin, interested only in personal gain. And so we think, sometimes we may think, well, how, if I surrender everything to Krishna, how will I be maintained? And so these thoughts come in our mind. And Shukracharya has this thought. He's telling Bali, you won't be truthful if you deny his request. Of course, you won't be truthful. But you also won't be truthful when he takes everything in 2 steps. And then where are you going to give him? The 3rd step, there won't be any land. And so this is he's thinking. He doesn't know that Krishna will give the intelligence to Bali Maharaj to figure out where to put the 3rd step. So, there is a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 3, verse 85. Advaitacharya is speaking to Nityananda. He says, you are a reject, Paramahansa. You have accepted the renounced order of life just to fill up your belly. I can understand that your business is to give trouble to Brahmins. And the purport on this verse is all about Smarta Brahmins, the difference between Smarta Brahmins and Vaishnava Goswamis. So, in other words, it says, Advaita Acharya, in a sense, accepted Nityananda Prabhu as a Paramahansa. In other words, Nityananda Prabhu had nothing to do with rules governing Smarta Brahmins. Thus, under the pretense of condemning him, Advaita Acharya was actually praising him. So what is a Smarta Brahmin? Who can tell me? What are the symptoms? How do we know somebody is a Smarta Brahmin? Yes?
Name is Jati Goshai.
Jati Goshai, okay. Okay, he believes in qualification by birth. And that's one quality of a Smarta Brahmin, is that he thinks if you're not born in a Brahmin family, then you have no qualification for spiritual life. Okay, that's one quality. What's another quality?
Nishin?
Yes, they're interested in material gain. They're interested in material gain, Adi Purush. Yes, yes. He's more interested in the rituals and the details and in the principles and the goals. And that's also Niyamagraha or Niyamagraha? Which one? Niyamagraha. You're too much interested in following the rules and you lose. And just like the Brahmins, where Krishna and Balaram, they went to beg from these Brahmins who were performing sacrifice. They were so interested in the rituals that they ignored the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, but their wives, they were transcendentalists, so they could appreciate Krishna and Balaram coming to beg. So yes, a Smarta Brahmin, he is attached to the rules, and he is so engrossed in the details that the big principles escape him. Krishna may come to his door and he won't give because it's not the proper time or he's not dressed properly or whatever. So, okay, we've got attached to the rules, caste by birth, And attached to material gain, Janmashtami, you had something?
No
devotion, not much devotion. Devotion.
They use the
shilas to crack the nuts on the altar instead of worshipping, yes?
Karmakandia,
yes. They're into the Karmakandia section of the Vedas, which give sacrifices for elevation to heavenly planets and other material gains. These are the smarter Brahmins. Okay. Yeah, they oppress other people. They give others trouble, actually, because of their pride that they are born in a certain family. And mostly they're also impersonalists, too. A lot of them are impersonalists. They don't believe in the Lord as supreme, although they may worship Vishnu, but not in a devotional way, but in an official way, to get the material gain. Okay. So Srila Prabhupada says, in this purport of Madhya 385, that in the Paramahansa stage, which is the supermost stage, one may appear to be a Vishayi on the platform of sense gratification, but in actuality he has nothing to do with sense gratification. At that stage, a person sometimes accepts the symbols and dress of a sannyasi, sometimes does not. Sometimes he dresses like a householder. Okay? So who is... Which Smarta Brahman in Chaitanya Lila became transformed into a Vaishnava? There was one very famous Smarta, yes? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, yes. And there is another verse, Madhya 12, 180. And after serving Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya with first-class prasadam, Gopinath Acharya said, just consider what the Bhattacharya's previous mundane behavior was. Just consider how at present he's enjoying transcendental bliss. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prabhupada explains, was previously a Smarta Brahman, one who strictly follows Vedic principles on the mundane platform. On the mundane platform, one cannot believe that prasadam is transcendental. So that we experience here in Vrindavan, that there are some Smarta Brahmins living in Vrindavan. They refuse to come and take prasadam from our temple because they feel that we are not Brahmins. So therefore, prasadam, it's not prasadam. So they cannot eat it. So that is one example. They refuse invitations. They also don't believe that Govinda is the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they have impersonalist. Many of them are impersonalists. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was also previously an impersonalist. He did not accept the form of the Lord. Or that a Vaishnava is a liberated person. So Srila Prabhupada, his movement is following Srila Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Devotion, that yata kanchanatang yati kangsyang rasa vidanata jijatvam jayate ninam, that you can become Brahmin just by initiation into the Vaishnava pancharatriki process. Madhya Lila 12, 180.
180?
Yeah, 180. So, now Gopinath Acharya pointed out how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had been converted by the causeless mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Being converted, Sarvabhauma partook of prasadam with the Vaishnavas. Indeed, he sat by the side of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what mercy! Before, he wouldn't even eat with the Vaishnavas, and now he's eating with Lord Chaitanya. So this is the mercy of the Lord. We'll hear about Kripa Siddha maybe today, or maybe another day. I don't remember which purport that's in. So verse 34, Vamanadev will first occupy the three worlds with one step. Then he will take his second step and occupy everything in outer space. And then he will expand his universal body to occupy everything. Where will you offer him the third step? So Prabhupada gives a wonderful purport here. Shukacharya wanted to tell Bali Maharaj how he would be cheated by Lord Vamana. You have promised three steps, he said, but with only two steps, all your possessions will be finished. How then will you give him a place for his third step? Shukracharya did not know how the Lord protects his devotee. The devotee must risk everything in his possession for the service of the Lord. But he is always protected and never defeated. By materialistic calculation, Shukracharya thought that Bali Maharaj would never, under no circumstances, be able to keep his promise to the Brahmachari Lord Vamanadeva. So we can see Shukracharya, he had a greater vision than Bali Maharaj. In one sense, he could see the future, what was going to happen. He could see all the things that he would occupy, the universe. But he did it, but his vision was limited because he did not have devotion to the Lord. So because he didn't have the highest vision of a Mahatma, Mahatma is broad-minded, and he can do anything for the service of the Lord. So Bali Maharaj, actually, although he was in the position of disciple, he had a higher vision than his Guru Maharaj. Of course, his guru was a Karmakandiya guru. He was not a Vaishnava guru, so that was the problem. And therefore, we will see there will be a conflict between the guru and the disciple here. Verse 35, you will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise, and I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. Learned scholars, do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They are not possible properly. They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. So if you give everything in charity, he's saying, how will you maintain yourself? This is only somebody who has something, but of course he's got the whole universe. This doesn't apply. And this reasoning doesn't apply. Therefore, now here's some advice from Shukracharya, how to spend your money. One who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in 5 parts. For religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. So don't look at your books and don't look at your computers and tell me what are the 5 parts. Give me 1 part. Yes. Sense gratification. Yes.
Religion.
Reputation.
Opulence.
Family maintenance. Okay, so this is the advice of Shukracharya. If you want to be happy in this world, divide your money in 5 ways. Dharma, yasha, fame. Artha. Artha is for increasing one's opulence. Kama, increasing sense gratification. And swajana, for maintaining one's family members. Now, Srila Prabhupada will give us another advice in the purport, how we should actually divide our accumulated wealth, if we have any. We can divide our accumulated wealth. Purport. The Shastras enjoin that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into 5 divisions. 1 part for religion, 1 part for reputation, 1 part for opulence, 1 part for sense gratification, and 1 part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. No dharma. Kama they manage also. Opulence they manage. But basically, they work to maintain their families in this age. Sri Rupa Goswami taught us by his own example, by using 50% of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family. One's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include dharma, artha, and kama. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion of one's accumulated wealth. This is a shastric injunction. So here we have it. This is repeated quite often in Srila Prabhupada's purports. 50% for Krishna, 25% for yourself, and 25% for the members of your family. Because if you don't give them, then they will complain. They won't be happy. You have to live in this world, so you have to satisfy everyone. And this, if you actually follow this instruction, and that's pure devotional service, because it's the instruction of Srila Prabhupada for Grihasthas to follow. If you follow this instruction, then that's pure. And I even know people who aren't grihasthas who follow. I know one lady in Mayapur who has no money. She just depends on donations. But whatever she gets, 50% she spends for serving the Vaishnavas. And 50% she keeps for her maintenance. And so this is a principle, or this is a detail, actually, of how to fulfill the principle of dividing wealth. If you have any accumulated wealth, you should divide it in this way. So, and Prabhupada gives the detail how to do it in this purport. So we have to sacrifice, yes?
But if you have no accumulated wealth.
You have no accumulated wealth. Yes, there's different things you can do. If you have no accumulated wealth, then you can say profit, whatever profit you have. Because if you maintain yourself, then there is a certain amount that you need to maintain yourself. And then there's a certain amount that you don't need to maintain yourself, that's extra. So that extra can be used for Krishna's service. So I have heard also that way, is your profit, what is your profit? You maintain yourself, and then what is your profit?
But in the West, devotees just end up paying the bills.
Right, yeah, so there's no profit. Yeah, it's never done. Then if you want to, then you have to live in the temple. That's the only way.
It's funny that you live, off the rat race society.
Yes, yes.
Or in the rat race society, it's unheard of.
Yeah, it's unheard of. In India, I know some people who are actually doing this. I know some people in South India, they give 50% to the temple and they live on the rest. They make a lot of money.
Living outside,
yeah. Living outside, and they make a lot of money, so, and they give a lot of money too. In the West, it's, yeah, the government takes everything. Yeah. So we'll go on a few more verses, and then I think it will be more clear, more clarified, actually. We'll hear something about Chanaka Pandit. Of course, the reason behind it is because that when you die, you're going to lose everything anyway. So might as well give it to Krishna and get the credit. Because after you, when you die, you won't have it. You can't keep it. And when you're old, all you have actually is your spiritual knowledge. It's all that's left. Your youth is lost. Your kids go away. What do you have left? Your money is there, or you have no money. So we have everyone in the West, they work hard until they're 62 or 65. Then they retire and they live on the money which they put away their whole life. But of course, by that time, the inflation has come. And so it's not what it used to be. Like my parents, they're retired and they're living on, they made a good salary when they were young. But then now it's what they get, you know, it's nothing. It's nothing. You can't live on it, actually. It's below the poverty line. You can't live on what before they were like in the upper middle class, and now it's below poverty. What they get every month is not enough to live. So it's this is the reality of the material world. My brother, one brother, he is living very poorly. He has a worse house to live in than I do. And the reason is because he's giving all his money to some bonds which he's going to cash in 8 years from now. And when he gets those bonds cashed, then he's going to live very nicely like a king. But actually, after 8 years, they're not going to be worth that much as they are now. And who knows what will happen? He may die and so many things. So now he's just putting away all that money, but for what purpose? So this is how people think like that. And then when you're old, what can you enjoy anyway? You can't enjoy. You just have to pay. When you get old, then you have to use the money to pay the medical bills. Yes. Well, what is it? Who is that Maharaj? Madhav Maharaj says, you use your health for wealth when you're young. You spend your health for wealth, and when you're old, you spend your wealth for health. So that's life in this material world. It's very, very difficult. So verse 38, some more advice by Shukacharya. Now in this verse, he's going to act like a very clever lawyer. He's going to find a loophole in what Bali Maharaj said already. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse? O best of the demons, just take from me the evidence of the Bhavricha Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful, preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. So here's a technical reason. You're not going to break your promise because you didn't say om, so it's not a promise. After all, you didn't say om. And then he'll go on, whatever you do, don't say om. Go on in the next verses, don't say om, don't say om. So om, if you say om, then it's truth. And it's a promise. If you don't say om, then you're not breaking your promise. It's okay. It's not a promise, after all. So he's a very good lawyer here. Now here's a scripture called Bhavricha Shruti. Adipurush, do you know anything about this shastra here? Bhavricha Shruti. Or you, no.
Bhavricha means, it's a grammatical term.
Acha. Grammatical term. Okay. It's not a name of a thing. Yeah. Okay, so we're getting evidence from the Vedas here. But he's actually misusing the Vedas. He's misusing. What is that? One of our aims, Shastric aims? Academic integrity. Don't misuse the scriptures for your own personal gain. Don't twist the scriptures. So this is Shukracharya is doing this. Now, you didn't say om, so it's not a promise. So don't worry. It's okay. You can say no, because you didn't promise, actually. So verse 39. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result, now he's going to be very philosophical, of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. Even if the body is based on untruth, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers without the help of the bodily tree. So you need your body, but without money, then how are you going to maintain it? So he's saying, body, this is the most important thing. Maintain your body. So in the purport, about six lines down, Srila Prabhupada says, without the help of the body, one cannot follow a system of religion, nor can one speculate on the philosophical perfection. So these are two paths, Upasana Kanda and Jnana Kanda, and if you don't have a body, how can you follow them? So he's preaching like this. Therefore, the flower and fruit, pushpa phalam, have to be obtained as a result of the body. Without the help of the body, that fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends yukta vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. So it's not that we let the body die. We also accept that we need the body. Why do we accept that we need the body? Although we're not the body, we know we're not the body, but we need it actually. Yes?
Because it's an energy of Krishna.
It's energy of Krishna? Yes? What else?
Because within human form of body,
yes, yes, the human body is very, very special. The purpose of human life is to go back to Krishna. And so we have this gift of the human form of life. So now we have to understand how to use it. That's a question of use only. The Burijan says you have to maintain your body just like you have to maintain a car, but don't make the body the center. This is the point. The body we have to take, especially after 40, after 50, you can't just let it go. When you're young, it's no problem. You just let it go. But when you get older, then you have to do preventive maintenance, or else it just deteriorates. And why do we do it? Why do we take so much trouble? It's to serve Krishna. So we can use our body to serve Krishna.
What did you read before?
Hmm?
You read that sentence, we have to take care of the body, otherwise
it... But don't make the body the center. Yeah. Verse 40. When a tree is uprooted, it immediately falls down and begins to dry up. Similarly, if one doesn't take care of the body, which is supposed to be untruth, in other words, if the untruth is uprooted, the body undoubtedly becomes dry. And so he's really twisting the philosophy here to try to get Bali Maharaj to say no. He's trying to convince him in many different ways. So we agree, we must take care of the body. Which verse in Bhagavad Gita
explains how we should take care of the body. Yes. Not enough. Yes, you cannot perform yoga if you eat too much, eat too little, sleep too much, or don't sleep enough. So what shall we do then? Yuktahara viharasya, yuktashesta sikarmashu. Should be regulated in four things. Four things we have to regulate. Eating, sleeping, working, and recreation. The body also needs recreation. Four things we have to, if we do that, then we'll be a yogi. This is the practice of yoga. We follow these regulations. We regulate eating, sleeping, and working, and recreation. Of course, Srila Prabhupada says, for a devotee, there's no work. It's all recreation. It's all recreation. But still, if we work the whole day, 20 hours a day, if we do a marathon, then it's very difficult. It's very difficult. So sometimes we can do that, especially when we're young, but then when you get older, you have to be regulated. Mode of goodness. We live in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is balanced. So purport. In this regard, Sri Rupa Goswami says, Prapanchikataya bhutya harisambhantivastana amukshvi parityaga vairagyam lagukatyate. One who rejects things without knowledge of their relationship to Krishna is incomplete in his renunciation. So Srila Prabhupada is agreeing with Sri Shukacharya, but in a Krishna conscious way. When the body is engaged in the service of the Lord, one should not consider the body material. Sometimes the spiritual body of a spiritual master is misunderstood. But Srila Rupa Goswami instructs, Prapanchikataya bhutya hari sambandhivastana. The body fully engaged in Krishna's service should not be neglected as material. One who does neglect it is false in his renunciation. If the body is not properly maintained, it falls down and dries up like an uprooted tree from which the flowers and fruit can no longer be obtained. The Vedas therefore enjoin, and there is a huge Sanskrit which I won't read. I'll skip the Sanskrit. The purport is that activities performed with the help of the body for the satisfaction of the absolute truth, Om Tat Sat, are never temporary, although performed by the temporary body. Indeed, such activities are everlasting. Therefore, the body should be properly cared for. Because the body is temporary, not permanent, one cannot expose the body to being devoured by a tiger or killed by an enemy. All precautions should be taken to protect the body. So devotees sometimes do crazy things in the name of they're not this body. Does anybody have experience of doing something crazy because you thought you were not the body, and then you got the reaction? Yeah, Jamashami?
When I was had been a devotee for 2 weeks.
2 weeks devotee?
I had the understanding that I was free from the laws of karma.
Okay, Janamashtami had the understanding he was free from the laws of karma after being devotee for 2 weeks.
So then I attended the first New York Rath Yatra.
Went to the first New York Rath Yatra.
1977. And I had just shaved up the day before.
And you just shaved up the day before? Being free from the laws of karma.
In those days, the parade was very long.
And there was a very long parade?
I had my head.
Head was shaved?
Exposed to the sun.
Hot sun.
And about 4 or 5 hours into the day.
4 or 5 hours
into
the day.
Your head is getting really sunburned.
So somebody said to him, Bhakti Jim, your head is getting very sunburned. But he said, no, I'm not this body.
So I just...
full faith in his Bhakti leader's instruction that...
And then it really started hurting.
And it started hurting.
And then I covered it.
He covered it.
And the next day, I woke up, and I looked like I had was one of these mutants out of Star Trek.
He woke up the next day with like a mutant out of Star Trek.
Oh,
half an inch and a half of fluid between
then,
on his skull.
And the fluid moved
the fluid moved in the forehead to your eyes.
So when this was in the 55th Street Temple.
In the 55th Street Temple. 55th Street. Okay, in New York.
There were a few grihasthas
there.
And mostly brahmacharis.
Mostly brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis.
But there were some children.
Some children were there in the temple.
And they would, you know, they'd come out to the elevator and they'd scream and run the other way. So I learned something.
So the children saw Janamashtami come out of the elevator and they screamed and ran the other way.
So I learned a little bit about
So he got some practical experience of how to apply Shastra in the first 2 weeks of being a bhakta. Anybody else have an experience where you thought you were not the body? Or whatever. Yes. Nishina Devi.
When you joined.
Okay, somebody asked you to be in charge of devotee kitchen. Big, huge karai, and Nishinga Devi is very small, as big as the karai, right? Yeah, so she was lifting, 10 kg karai, and she's very, very small. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, actually, Gurudas also, he gives an experience in his book on Srila Prabhupada, that Prabhupada told him that the material world is not real. So then he decided to make an experiment. He said, okay, I'll walk into this wall. And he walked in, so it must not be real. So he walked into the wall and he banged his head. He said, well, let me try one more time. So 3 times he walked into the wall. He said, maybe I better ask Swamiji about this. And so then Prabhupada explained, yes, it's temporary. It's there, but it's real, but it's temporary. So, yes. We have these experiences of the philosophy. Yes, we don't understand. We misapply the philosophy, yukta vairagya, and sometimes even devotees would be so sick and they would still go on and do things like that. So we have to understand how to apply the philosophy of yukta vairagya. Now here is a way not to apply it. The way Shukacharya is applying it is that if you serve Krishna, then you're going to lose everything. So don't do it. Adi Purush, did you have something? Yeah, okay. Oh, you have many. Okay, give us the best one. He thought, I don't have winter boots.
And then he thought, well, winter is still a few months away.
Winter is a few months away?
By that time, I would already self-realize.
He said, by that time, I'll be already self-realized. I won't need winter boots. Yes. We have these ideas, these crazy ideas. Harinam in winter. Yeah, we used to too. I went on Harinam in winter.
He went barefoot.
In Harinam in the snow. Oh. Yeah. So anyway, these are crazy things devotees do. I mean, a whole book should be written about this and given to the new devotees so they don't do it. Or humor in Krishna consciousness. Yes. So one bhakta was a good collector, but due to different reasons, he drifted away from Krishna consciousness.
He got into fire yagyas.
He was doing a fire yagya for a demigod in his garden. He didn't realize how close he was to the fire. He died. He went under the shower and died on the spot. Because he was so close to the fire. He was burnt.
He was burned badly.
He didn't know. He didn't notice he was... Yeah.
And then just to cool off...
To cool off, he took a shower and then he died. So don't do it. Don't do it. Fire sacrifices. Like that. Okay. Yes, this is Kali Yuga. Nobody's qualified. When you're not qualified to do something, then you get the reaction. There's no qualified Brahmins like that too. Like these sages of Naimisharanya, they were doing fire sacrifice for 1,000 years, and they were getting reaction. The smoke was bothering them from the smoke from the fire, so much smoke. You know, when smoke gets in your eyes, and it's really painful. And so if they couldn't do it, then what to speak of us doing something
like that. Okay, so the body is a tree to bear fruits for Krishna's service. That is a lesson we should learn. So the practical application of the theory of not being the body is to use it for Krishna. It's not our body. This is the highest realization. I'm not the body means it's not my body. It's Krishna's body. So I will use it for him. So verse 41. So back into the technical, what's going to happen if he says Om? The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one becomes free from attachment to money because his money is taken away from him. Yeah, if you have no money, how are you going to be attached? That's good reasoning. Don't be attached to money. Let me take it. That's Prabhupada's reasoning. I'll take all your money away from you and you don't have any more problem of being attached to money. Yeah, you can use that line on Sankirtan maybe. To be without money is not very satisfactory, for in that position one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken, especially when one gives charity to a poor man or beggar. One remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. So he's painting a very dismal picture of what's going to happen if you have no money. No, you will lose your sense gratification, you lose your self-realization, you'll become poverty-stricken. He's painting the worst picture, worst scenario. What's going to happen to Bali Maharaj? So whatever you do, don't say Om. Don't say Om, because if you do, you'll lose everything. So this is a Vedic. Bali Maharaj was Vedic. This is Vedic times. They were in the Vedic times, and he was doing everything properly according to the Vedas. So his guru is saying, okay, just don't say Om. It's all right. Whatever you say, it doesn't matter, but don't say Om. Near the end of paragraph 1 in the purport, even though there are so many charitable institutions, poverty has not been driven from human society. So Srila Prabhupada is taking the side of Shukracharya again in a positive way. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhikshave Sarvam Om Kurvan Nalam Kamina Chatmane. One should not give everything to the beggars among the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, not only because it feeds them, but also because it gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. I was reading a very early Back to Godhead magazine article by Vishnu Jan Maharaj, and he had this outline of Varnashram, and he had an outline of how to help the poor. And in that outline, he said, the devotees should go, bring prasadam to them, teach them how to chant, how to offer their food, how to make an altar in their house, offer everything to Krishna, have class, have all these things, and then they will be happy, even if they're poor. He had this huge program, how to do this, a whole daily schedule for anyone. So this was Srila Prabhupada. We are therefore opening hundreds and thousands of centers for those who are poor, both in money and in knowledge, to enlighten them in Krishna consciousness and reform their character by teaching them how to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, which are the most sinful activities and which cause people to suffer life after life. The best way to use money is to open such a center where all may come live and reform their character. They may live very comfortably without denial of any of the body's necessities, but they live under spiritual control. Thus they live happily and save time for advancement in Krishna consciousness. If one has money, it should not be squandered away on nothing. It should be used to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement so that all of human society will become happy, prosperous, and hopeful of being promoted back home, back to Godhead. So the point is that we should let the temporary material needs be dealt with in such a way that we make spiritual advancement. I think there's in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 one purport, constitutional needs and conditional needs, so it has to be balanced. Srila Prabhupada says that, 9th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. It must be balanced. Balance our conditional needs and our constitutional needs. So the body is a lost cause, but we can spiritualize it. We can use it in a very nice way. So Srila Prabhupada, Burjan tells some a little story. about Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was asked what he was expecting when he came to the West. He thought he would be sent straight back to India. Because so many other gurus, they were there before him, and they were saying so much nonsense. You can enjoy and still be spiritual. It's spiritual life to enjoy sense gratification. And so when Prabhupada met one bogus Hatha Yoga guru in Hong Kong, when he was in Hong Kong, and the guru was eating breakfast with his disciple, and the disciple was a meat eater, but the guru was vegetarian. So at the meal, the disciple didn't eat any meat, and the guru asked, "Why aren't you eating your meat?" And the disciple said, "Well, I don't want to do it in front of you, you're vegetarian." And what did the guru say? "Is the tiger the same as the lamb?" So in other words, he gave him sanction to eat meat. So Prabhupada said, this is going on. That the bogus gurus, they will compromise with the principles. They will not follow the four regulative principles. So Allen Ginsberg told Prabhupada that one guru told him, LSD is like Jesus, and it will give you liberation. LSD is a drug, in case you don't know. So people think, yes, we like this guru. But Prabhupada said, no, LSD is material. How will you get liberation with something material? Ravinda Sarup Prabhu, when he first heard the four regulative principles from Srila Prabhupada, he thought, at least one person has the courage to speak the truth. You have to follow these four regulative principles. So this is Srila Prabhupada. And this is also Bali. This is not, Shukracharya is not like Srila Prabhupada. He is in a different, he's Karmakandya. He's Smarta Brahman. So therefore, he's preaching in a Karmakandya Smarta Brahman way. Verse 42, therefore, now he's given all his arguments, therefore the safe course is to say no. Although it is a falsehood, it protects one completely. He's giving more reasons. It may be a lie, that's okay. It's a lie. We know it's a lie. But here's some good reasons. It protects you. It draws the compassion of others toward oneself. And it gives one full facility to collect money from others for oneself. They will think you don't have the money. You need to collect. Nonetheless, if one always pleads he has nothing, he is condemned. For he is a dead body while living or while still breathing, he should be killed. So he gives both sides of the argument. discussed five types of irreligion in the end of Canto 7. Remember these types of irreligion, Vitarma. Which one is this type of irreligion that we're seeing here right now? It's a type of irreligion. Upadharma. Nearness to, yes? Chaladharma. It's Chaladharma. Chaladharma means using word jugglery to cheat people. Chaladharma. So here we're seeing an example of Chaladharma, word jugglery, by Shukracharya. The purport last sentence, if one continuously poses himself as possessing nothing and collects money by begging, he should be killed. Sainam tachaivahan yat. So this is, Srila Prabhupada agreed with that. He agrees with some of his statements. And now the ultimate argument, the last verse, that actually, you know, it's okay to lie. And there's all these examples of when you can lie. Verse 43. In flattering a woman to bring her under control, in joking, in a marriage ceremony, in earning one's livelihood, when one's life is in danger, in protecting cows and Brahminical culture, or in protecting a person from an enemy's hand, falsity is never condemned. So which one of these is Bali Maharaj, in which category here? Adi Prush. Vritti? For livelihood. Any other one? I see another one too. I mean, it's indirectly, yes? Falsity? Well, yeah, falsity is not condemned. But he's giving all these reasons. Yes?
Protecting a person from an
enemy. Enemy's hand, yes. The enemy is coming to cheat you. Somebody representing your enemy is coming to cheat you, take everything away, so it's all right to lie. And also, in earning your livelihood, now you may lose all your livelihood if you don't tell a lie. So which, there are different kinds of shastra. There's Artha Shastra, Dharma Shastra, Kama Shastra, and there's Transcendental Shastra. So which category of shastra would this come under, Adipurush?
Mostly Artha Shastra.
Artha. Some Dharma is there also, huh? Which one is Dharma? Cows and Brahminical culture is Dharma Shastra. So it's a mixture here of Artha Shastra and Dharma Shastra, but basically mostly Artha Shastra. Artha Shastra means for your own gain. Artha means gain, material gain. Huh? Asat Shastra. Yes, Hitopadesh, some of these scriptures, they are called Artha Shastra, Niti Shastra. Niti, and this is what Prahlad Maharaj was rejecting. Shukracharya's sons were trying to teach Prahlad Maharaj Artha Shastra, Niti Shastra, but he just couldn't understand it. What is his friends and enemies? I don't understand. How you can somebody be your enemy? Because he had a transcendental vision. Yes.
Krishna used
Artha Shastra
in the first chapter.
Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Krishna didn't speak in the first chapter. You mean in
second
chapter?
And then
yes.
So they could not come to an end.
Yeah, they were using different shastras. Yes, Krishna brought in Artha Shastra. He also brought in transcendental shastra, you're not this body. But then he brought in Artha. As a kshatriya,
yeah,
you should know this, that there's no higher gain than fighting unreligious, of course, dharma also, unreligious principles. But gain and dharma, Artha and dharma and Artha. Yes. No, we should not kill. This is Dharma Shastra. On the basis that actually, no, these are family members. They're not ordinary aggressors. Aggressors, okay. But they're not ordinary. They're family members. So we should not kill. So he was, yes, he was, his arguments, he was arguing from Dharma Shastra. And also Artha Shastra. If we kill, then we will go to hell. I have heard from the Sipic succession. So, in Chaitanya Lila, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, oh, yes, I have the reference. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Lila, 19th chapter, verses 46 to 61. There is a pastime of Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya with one sannyasi who was of the category of this type of guru. Nityananda said to Lord Chaitanya, "This is the house of a sannyasi." The Lord then said, "If we are fortunate, we can meet him." The two Prabhus smiled as they went to the sannyasi's house. Vishambhar thereupon offered obeisances to the sannyasi. And seeing Vishambhar's most enchanting form, beautiful limbs and smiling face, the sannyasi in great satisfaction offered him various benedictions. "May you achieve wealth, family, good wife, and learning." And what will Lord Chaitanya say to this? "Oh Gosai, this is not a benediction. Rather you should say, may you attain the mercy of Krishna." So, Vishnu Bhakti Ashirvad Akai Abhay Yepuliva Goshai Tomar Yoganai. Benediction of devotional service to Vishnu is inexhaustible and indestructible. Whatever you have said, O Goshai, does not befit you. Sannyasi smiled and said, "I am now directly experiencing what I have previously heard about. If good advice is given, people will chase you with a stick. The behavior of this son of a Brahmin is just like that. I happily awarded him the benediction of wealth, and what to speak of appreciating it? He found fault in me." The sannyasi said, "Listen, O son of a Brahmin, why do you criticize my benediction? If one who has taken birth in this world does not engage in sense gratification, does not enjoy beautiful women, and does not accumulate wealth, then what is the use of his life? And you are embarrassed to accept the benediction of such wealth. Tell me, even if you have devotion to Vishnu, what will you eat if you don't have wealth?" The same arguments. "Listen, O sannyasi Goshai," Lord Chaitanya said, "we will all certainly eat whatever is destined by our karma. If wealth and family are the aim of life, then tell me, why are they taken away at the time of death? O Goshai, try to understand what is good and what is bad. There is no benediction other than devotional service to Krishna." Okay, so there's another example of this type of guru. That is Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya Lila, chapter 19, verse 46 to 61, and verse 69. And verse 69. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on these verses? Yes, Jaini Tagore.
About this thing, being attached to money.
Being attached to money.
If you have it.
If you have money.
What if you don't have it? You're attached to some achievement which depends also on money.
So, what's the question? So if you don't have money, then you're attached to some achievement that depends upon money. Like distributing books and collecting money. Oh, you're attached to something that requires money to do. Is that what you're saying? Like you want to go to the holy places, but you have no money. Yeah. Actually, we had a devotee in our class last year who was in that position. It was very interesting. Sarvasachi. And he told the story that he was going to be Garhastha, so he decided to travel with some friends and collect so much money so then he could travel to the holy places and do all these things. So what happened? He was traveling with them, but he couldn't get into it. What happened? Do you remember, Adi Purush? Somehow it didn't work out. And he couldn't do the collecting or anything. But then he ended up in the holy place with no money. And he ended up, and he had no money, but he came and he joined our class last year, 5th and 6th cantos. He found a rejected 5th and 6th canto lying on the road. And then he took it as a sign to join the course. He found the rejected book. And he says he realized that actually he thought he needed money, but actually here he is, he's living, and he didn't need the money to live here. But now he's living here, and all his friends who are collecting money to be in the Holy Dham, they're not in the Holy Dham, they're out collecting money to live. And he, who decided just to depend on Krishna, is in the Holy Dham, learning Bhagavatam. So actually, you can talk to him if he's in Radhakund now. If you want any advice on how to do that, how to live without money, he has a lot of experience. Sarvasachi, he was in our class last year. Sarvasachi, he came here for a few days. Yes, Madhavan Puri. Preetu and Gaya were. Who said this? Vamanadev, before. Oh, in this chapter, yeah.
And,
he said Preetu and Gaya were such great kings and they couldn't fulfill. When I read that, it also struck me that how Preetu was not satisfied. Oh, actually, that could be the point that he wanted to. He wasn't satisfied, so therefore he did all these sacrifices, just like Indra. Yeah. And then Brahma had to come and convince him, stop the sacrifice. Just see what Indra's doing.
Oh, okay.
And in one sense, there is an example. With Indra, again.
Yeah.
Here is with Indra.
True, but Preetu was not at fault.
Yeah, Preetu was not at fault. But you can see where he it wasn't at fault, but still Brahma took the side of Indra.
Yeah, for the sake of...
Edification. Yeah. And he said, stop your sacrifices. Don't remember your purpose in coming here as an incarnation.
True.
So we don't forget your purpose in coming here is to establish religion and look what Indra is doing because you want to do your 100 sacrifices and Indra, the result is that Indra is creating so much irreligion. So just see the result. Now you should stop your sacrifice. So, I mean, in that sense you can see. He's a devotee. Preetu is a devotee. Indra is a devotee. So sometimes Brahma has to come and do mediation, like Braj Bihari, between the devotees. It was getting out of hand. Indra was really getting out of hand.
He wasn't going to be killed.
Yes. And then his son was after him. He was going to kill Indra. So then, Brahma had to stop this. So see, that's a point. Yeah, his son was going to kill Indra. Okay, any other... questions? Adi Purush.
43. It seems to be slanted for men.
Yeah, it seems slanted, huh?
Flattering a woman to bring
her under control. Marriage ceremony means marriage ceremony.
In marriage ceremony,
lying means praising the groom.
Both for the men and
for the women. Okay. So there is a balance here. In the marriage ceremony, it's the man's side. Lie to the man. I mean, joking. Any other questions? Yes, comments.
Regarding this line.
Sometimes truth may evoke envy. Well, it's not in the list. About to avoid inciting envy. Anyway, yeah, there's some BTG article, and also it's also in Back to Godhead that about speaking truth, palatable truth, has to be spoken. You have to speak truth in such a way that you don't disturb others. Speak it in such a way you don't disturb others. You can say, you know, the truth. Yeah, actually, there's an example about one astrologer and one king. Astrologer came to the king, and he told the king, the king told him, oh, I have this dream last night that some of my teeth fell out, that my teeth were falling out. And the astrologer said to him, oh, this is not a good sign. All of your family members will die before you. So the king was very angry with him and drove him out. So then this astrologer came to ask advice from Birbal. And Birbal said, oh, you should tell the king. Well, then Birbal came. And he told the king. Then the king asked Birbal, well, what about this dream? Birbal said, oh, this dream shows that you will live the longest of all your family. So they're both of them are truth. But how you say it. You know, how you say it, the truth. This is, of course, Arthashastra. But also sometimes you have to use Arthashastra in your preaching. In your preaching. I know some preachers, they will say, you know, to sell the books. You know, and they will ask, well, what's this book about? Is it about this, that? And say, yes, it's certainly about this and that, although it's not about this and that. Is this about how to bring peace? I say, yes, this is how to bring peace. Is this about how to become healthy? Oh, yes, this is about how to become healthy. And then one time somebody, it used to be a practice of devotees in the old days to dress up like Santa Claus and sell books. So one time one devotee, this in Bhaktisastri class, devotee told me this experience. Did you dress up as Santa Claus? And the person asked, oh, this is about Santos. He said, yes. And then the guy pulls out a gun and said, okay, show me where it says in your book that this is about Santos. So luckily the devotee Krishna helped him. He opened the page and there it was, Santos, the Santos, the peaceful persons. He said, see, see? Not Santos, the Shantos. So, yes, you have to. If you speak the truth, Krishna will help you. But you have to be intelligent so as not to disturb the people when you speak the truth. You may lose your life. Actually, in this crazy world, yes.
Identity, false pride, something like that.
And if you speak the truth, according to Mahabharata, then all your words, whatever you speak, will come true. If you speak something, if you always speak the truth,
you become humble
if you speak the truth. Actually, yeah, my son told me about a movie he watched about a lawyer. And the lawyer, it was his son's birthday, and so the son made a wish because his father was never home and was always telling, I'm coming, but he never came. So the son made a wish on his birthday cake. In the West, they do this. And the wish was that his father would always tell the truth. And so it happened in the movie. Here is this lawyer, and lawyers are always telling lies. So he couldn't speak a lie, and his whole life was completely turned around. He couldn't speak a lie. And he was losing his court cases, and everything was happening. So this is something very difficult in the material world not to to speak a lie. Now, what was your question? Oh, it was a comment. What was your comment? You speak truth, you become humble. So this lawyer became very humble when he had to speak the truth. And it's so embarrassing, too, because things on your mind, you think something and then you just speak what you think, and then it's embarrassing for those kind of people who don't follow the truth. Yes, Sajivati?
What kind of truth?
What kind of truth? So Krishna is looking at the present. That you're truthful in the present, not worried about the past or future. Because, yes, it's always changing. So be truthful in the present.
Speaking about absolute truth.
Then no problem. So better you stick to that. It's a problem always. So you just stick to the absolute truth, and then you'll have no problems. Better. Yes. Speak the absolute truth. Manjapuri? 18:47.
Right.
Okay, so he's bringing up the point that in Bhagavad Gita it says if you engage in your own duties of your own nature, according to your nature, it's not no imperfection. Like a Vaishya. A Vaishya has to speak a lie to do business. They have to do. So the point is, okay, you speak a lie to do business, and then what do you do with the money? That's the point. The point is not whether you speak the lie or don't speak the lie, but what do you do with the money? The point is, okay, you spoke a lie, you did your business. Like Prabhupada says, he gives the example, for you, I'm not making any profit. So that's a lie. Because without profit, they cannot do business.
And there's a story of that.
Yeah, it's to save a life, to save the cows and Brahmins. That's given here, Dharma Shastra or Artha Shastra. Anyway, we're not getting into that. That's a detail. That's a detail. Yeah, that's a detail. We won't worry about these details. We're talking about speech right now. Yes. Okay, one devotee. Some devotees have amazing experiences in devotional life, and so we'll hear about one such devotee from Adi Purush. Some people inquire from this devotee about his spiritual life. Okay, so he doesn't boast or brag, but he just, whatever he speaks about his devotional life, it evokes envy.
So what is the solution for such people?
Maunavrat. So what is the solution if you speak about your own devotional life?
Spiritual life.
Yeah, well, I would... If that is the experience, either he had a lot of enemies from last life, or else he's saying it the wrong way, so that people get the impression that behind what he's saying there is some pride. They may sometimes you don't. So it's not so much what you say; it's how you say it. Yeah. Yes. 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 Even to your statement in Jiva Dharma, even to your guru, you should not reveal your happy experiences in emotional life. Yeah, it's dangerous. Go ask Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yes. Okay, Adi Purush would like to answer that question. Yeah, if you do it with pride that I have this ecstatic experience, it's all lost. Your whole thing is lost. And after Abhay was next. Yes? Yeah, if you know it's going to disturb, then why talk about your spiritual life anyway? You know, just say, yes, I'm chanting, I'm following. Actually, Srila Prabhupada was so humble. And he would say, you know, he says, people say I'm a pure devotee, but actually, if I have any qualification, it's only one qualification, that I'm trying to follow the orders of my spiritual master. He didn't say I'm following the orders. He says I'm trying to follow. I'm trying to be a devotee. He didn't say I'm a devotee. I'm trying to follow. I'm trying to be a devotee. I'm trying to serve the devotees. This is the mentality. Yes. You were next. He was next. Jai Nitago. Three things are like spices which must be covered or else they'll lose their fragrance. And where is this from? Where do you hear the name of the guru? Relationship with Krishna. And? What was the third one? Name of the, what is it? Name of the guru?
Yes, I don't.
Relationship and mantra.
Mantra.
Your mantra. Mantra, name of the guru, relationship with Krishna. These things must be kept secret. No, relationship with Krishna. Means your siddha swarup. Yes. Why shouldn't we say the name of our guru? I don't know if this is a... Okay, Adi Prabhu should answer this question. Okay, so where is this article? Okay, some disciples use the name of the guru to push their influence and power. Like especially, like he was, Chandrasekhar was telling me, yes, I'm serving, I'm the servant, I'm the personal servant of this such and such guru. And so therefore, whatever I say, you know, whatever... You have to, I'm first. Yeah, so this can be misused. Name of, in the guru's name. Okay.